You're listening to The American Journal with Rex Jones and Tim Tompkins. Watch it live right now at band.video.
The most powerful morning broadcast in the nation, in the world, The American Journal. We do the deep dive, we do the news blitz, we do the guest interview, we do it all. But I've got breaking news here for you right now. Rex Jones reporting live for Infowars.com. Shipping sources say Iran threatening ships trying to pass through Hormuz right now. From Eric Doherty, just in, oil tankers have been stopped from going through the Strait of Hormuz. Iranian news claims because of Israel's ceasefire breach.
Here we go.
Weren't we just talking about this?
Here we go again.
Wow. Iran knows what's coming. If they screw peace talks, the first 24 hours of ceasefire are critical. We're going to continue to cover that. Wanted to break that news live to the audience. We have Amy Dangerfield joining us now on the show. Amy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on the show. We really enjoy, we're going to have a great conversation here. There's a lot of things happening in the news cycle right now. And actually, Rex just broke something. I'm sure yes. You just heard it. What are your thoughts on Iran stopping those oil tankers after this whole ceasefire?
Listen, I'm really not surprised. Obviously, we all breathed a sigh of relief yesterday when we heard the news about the ceasefire. But I think that anybody who's been following this, they are not surprised that it is not standing, because obviously a lot of it is contingent upon what Israel does. The ceasefire seems to have been primarily through, you know, Iran and American diplomatic talks. However, when it comes to Israel, that is clearly a force that we cannot constrain, we cannot control. And so really, the longevity of the ceasefire and it lasting the entire 2 weeks, it was really dependent on the way Israel decided to move. And we saw last night, they were bombing, this morning, I believe, bombing Lebanon.
Yep.
One of the most Christian country in the Middle East. I think it's absolutely disgusting right. And demonic. And so I'm really not surprised that Iran is taking a hard stand here.
Well, what it shows me is that, you know, Bibi does act almost in his own interest and autonomously.
Sure. No, absolutely. And the thing is we look at it over here just as Americans, we feel like we have no control. I think the rest of the world just feels like they have no control. Moving forward, of course, we're obviously like anti-war and we're praying for peace. We want this peace deal to go through. Amy, how likely is this in your mind?
Listen, again, it's all dependent on what Israel does. I mean, I surely what we do as well. And I think that really comes down to, is Trump actually gone insane? Is he the madman that was reflected in that post that he put out on Easter? Or was that a strategic tactic that he used to make them think that he had gone mad so that they would be willing to come to the table with peace talks and negotiations? But ultimately, I believe the true consummation of the peace proposal, it rises and falls on Israel, and we cannot control them. They're acting of their own accord. And so it's going to depend on.
I mean, Lebanon's a disaster.
It is. It is. And here's the thing, even without Israel in the equation, I look at the peace plan and like the rhetoric that's coming out. Both sides are like claiming victory right now.
Right.
Iran has come out with this long statement saying, oh, we made them cave in to our demands. And then, you know, Pete Hegseth goes on to, you know, goes on air today and being like, oh, well, they came begging to us too. So where do you see the actual plan? Like whose plan is the real plan?
Who do you think
we got 10-point plan and then we got 15-point plan. And Rex and I have been confused all this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're all kind of confused. Whenever we've heard any speculation of peace talks or Iran wanting to come to the table with negotiations, they've had their spokespeople come out and say, we are, in fact, not speaking with you guys, right? So it's difficult to tell who is bluffing. I mean, obviously, I'm not very trusting of our government. So I certainly cannot say either way, whether Trump is being entirely honest with us. I think that maybe it was a combination of all of the people yesterday calling to invoke the 25th Amendment, just the way that the general population reacted to just the brute force of him willing to literally take down an entire civilization. I think that maybe that kind of caused him to pump the brakes. But when you look at this thing from a bird's eye view, what have we really achieved out of any of it? I mean, when you look at the plan that's on the table, they're allowed to continue enriching uranium, according to them. They still have a supreme leader who is even more radicalized than the original one, right, because he watched his whole family die. And really, the only thing that Iran has not gotten from this so-called agreement is the reparations that they initially asked for. But they do kind of get the opportunity to rebuild their civilization using the money that they get from the toll, from allowing ships to pass through the strait. And they're kind of using that, I guess, in lieu of the reparations. So what has the U.S. actually got from this? I think it would be wise for Trump to just lie to the American public, who obviously aren't as tapped in as all of us, and say, we won, guys. We got all of our strategic outcomes. But anybody who's been following this thing knows that that's just simply not true. I mean, we've just lost American lives, and all of the objectives that they initially set out to achieve have not been achieved. But I think it would be wise for him to just lie and say, we won, guys. We did it. But again, ultimately, I think it's all just going to depend on how Israel chooses to act from here on out.
I have to say, like, we agree, and we think there is real mobility on the U.S. side, people that want peace, but it really is all dependent on really our 51st state in the region. It's U.S.-Israeli empire that we really always talk about on this show, because we're kind of joined at the hip. And we would like to look at things in a vacuum. We're like, okay, it's America and the American people should be put first, and it's our interests that are the priority. But we're seeing it reflected not just in politics, but in media as well. I wanted to ask you this question. What do you think of the neocon faction? Do you think that is going to be there's been this resurgence in the right wing, so-called right wing. We have these chicken hawks, these war hawks, people that love conflict, that love death. Do you think this is just a flash in the pan, or do you think this is making a resurgence? Do you think this is going to be kind of like the new takeover of the Republican Party back to the age of John McCain?
I don't think they ever really left, to be honest. Right. But I think what's kind of heartening for me is seeing this surge of America First candidates really stepping forward and running. And it's not at the level, obviously, of a presidential level, but we're seeing people who are running for governor, who are running for Congress, running for Senate, people who are boldly claiming that they are America First, they are anti-war, they're against AIPAC, they're against foreign lobbying. And there's been a huge shift, I think, even with normal people, largely due to this war. I mean, it's terrible. It's disgusting. The one positive, I guess, if you could call it that, is the people who are opening their eyes to the fact that the government does not care about them. It doesn't care about them. It doesn't care about the effects that this war has on people economically. Obviously, they're feeling it when they go to fill up gas, right? Obviously, it's impacting our relations with our allies in the region. And people are looking at this and they're saying, did they consider us at all when they endeavored upon this pointless war, this pointless war of choice?
Right.
And so I think that the more people continue to open their eyes, the more viable these America First platforms are going to become, not as just some fringe ideology, right, but something that's actually a viable platform to run on.
Yeah.
And so I honestly think that that's our biggest hope. And we start small. We start with local governance. We start with, the district. We start with the state. And then when we get enough of the people in who reflect our ideals, eventually we can make real change.
No, I think that's a phenomenal point. And when I think about America First, it's not America First in the sense of like isolationism. I think because we're in a global market, we're all connected and we're getting most of our food overseas. We're getting a lot of our consumer items overseas. So there's no way we could like go back to, the 40s and be like, okay, or the late 30s and be like, okay, we're isolated completely and we're not going to do business with anybody. And it's just America only.
I got something to add to this and I want to toss back to you. Like, it's following the golden rule. Like, we want our country to do unto other countries as we would like done to us.
Yeah.
Right. Wouldn't you say that's a good way?
No, that is a good way. And so when we talk about the rest of the world, and I'm sure you're following this as well, I hear the accent. I'm not exactly sure where you're from. Is it Australian? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's a really good guess. Yeah. I mean, I haven't been back to Australia in 10 years, actually.
Wow.
But yeah, I was born and raised in Australia. I call it Ozmerican now. It's a bit of a weird blend. But honestly, that's why I'm so patriotic and why I love America so much, because seeing the way these Western countries around the world have fallen, Australia included. And by the way, Australia has been one of the countries who have most been impacted economically.
That's
by this.
That's what I was going to ask you about.
It's like $12 a gallon to fill up in Australia right now. And it's terrifying. I mean, some people have been acting very erratically in certain regions of Australia. There's no groceries on the shelf. There's a lot of fear mongering that's going on over there. And so, you know, Australia is a mess. The UK is a mess. Socialism is taking over. There's no freedom of speech. In Australia, people are being arrested for wearing T-shirts that say "From the River to the Sea." There's guys who are behind bars for giving like a 40-second speech on Australia Day, simply stating that Israel is not our greatest ally. And so when I look at that and I look at the freedom that we have here, that's what makes me so patriotic, but also terrified at the same time that we're going to lose it here. They're yes. already passing anti-Semitism laws here in Florida, where I live, also in Ohio. And thankfully, they're not really being enforced, at least not at scale. But I'm scared of what's going to happen when this power grip that Israel has over us, if we don't stop that, they could just click that on button and all of a sudden these laws that breach the First Amendment start being enforced.
I mean, we talk about that all the time on the show, and this is like, it's civil rights, it's human rights, it's literally liberation, pro-humanity. Like, how could you not be for free speech? How could you not be for liberty to say and think and do what you actually believe in, as long as you're not hurting somebody? And that's the real American ethos. And what this country has done, what this state thousands of miles away has done, is they've made us prioritize their interests like they're our interests, and they're just not. On its face, like, Israel's interests are just not our interests. So why are we involved in this? Why do we fund it? Why do we fund the death? Oh, because if we're not running that region, somebody else will. It's the big bad man theory. We have to be the big bad man, right, or else there'll be another big bad man that'll come in. We can't have that. And a lot of the time, what that theory does in the minds of people, and just kind of like the common American thought, is like, well, you know, I'm just Joe Sixpack. I don't know about the war, but I assume the war is good because it's for my empire and the empire needs to propagate itself. They don't even know about any of the dozens of, or hundreds of civilian factions, of populations, of tribes, of people that have been displaced, that have been murdered, that have been killed all around the Middle East in places they couldn't even point out on a map or know that exist.
Yes.
Right, Tim?
And the question that, yeah, no, you're 100% right. And so this is where I wanted to go with this conversation and ask you, because you're probably, you know, well-versed about what's happening around the world as well. You know, I look at the situation and I see like the United States has so much influence. Everyone across the world follows what the United States does. We breathe. People are like clocking.
It's the show of the world. It's reality TV.
It's the show of the world. So, you know, they're reporting more in the U.S. sometimes than they are in their own countries. But then we also have the ripple effect of all the economic impacts that happen here, or the decisions we make impact a country that has nothing to do with it. And so you were talking about something earlier about what Australians are going through. And I wanted to talk about, like, the standard of living. Are they making as much as Americans, but then also suffering worse on these ripple effects that are happening based off of the conflict and all of that?
I would say earnings, like, for minimum wage are higher. It's like a $26 minimum wage. I would say when it comes to like industries, you know, gig economy, that type of thing, I'd say it's probably very similar. As well as when it comes to like professional work, but definitely the cost of living is much higher. I believe that Sydney is the most expensive city in the world to live in, Whoa. If I'm not mistaken, or at least up there, like
it's
one of the very
one or
very
two
top.
With New York. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Correct. And so, and then when it comes to things like grocery prices, gas prices, definitely much higher than over here. Absolutely. Because Australia, it's a mixed economy. It has a lot of government benefits, socialist aspects. You know, there's free healthcare. There is a lot of programs that can qualify you for free education, for example. And simultaneously, they have a huge immigration problem, illegal immigration problem.
Really?
Where they're flooding the country. Yes. I mean, multiculturalism, it was always prevalent when I lived in Australia. But now you go to a city like Sydney or Brisbane, Perth, any of these major cities, and you are hard pressed to look around and spot like a white Australian, honestly.
Who's
and so
moving there?
People from all over the world, a lot of Asian countries, and a lot of third and second world countries. Like, we do get the overflow of these war-torn countries where it's no longer safe for them. They come over to Australia, a lot of Lebanese. And unfortunately, what happens then is these illegals also get access to the same level of benefits that the Australian people had. And these are things that I was grateful for growing up. I mean, I took a couple of ambulance rides to the hospital and they were free. But now we're at the point where the resources are absolutely overwhelmed and people are calling for ambulances, especially in rural places. And they're just not coming. They're not coming in time. People are dying. There aren't enough hospital beds available. And because of this issue where there's just everything is free, but there's not enough to go around for absolutely everybody, they have to put the cost of living up to make up for that. And so people are really struggling in Australia.
Well, you're making such a key point here. It's the same people that want these wars that also want the mass migration. So you go, hold on, you want us to go pay and spend billions of dollars to go destroy these countries over there, and then you want us to take the migrants that result from the economic turmoil and the destruction of their nation.
And then they complain. It often comes out as a complaint of like, wait, how did all these immigrants end up here?
They're the most passionate. I hate the Muslim, blah, blah, blah. But you brought them over here.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
And it's like if the country. Go ahead.
Well, I do have a theory about it because Australia is also one of the most dystopian countries when it comes to things like digital ID, for example. Like, I've been on record for a while now saying that I wouldn't be surprised if Australia becomes the first Western country to resemble communist China and basically like everything except names with like a social credit system and things like this. They recently passed a law where you literally need to even upload your ID to be able to use things like Google, for example.
What?
Not sure if that's been fully enforced yet, but yeah, you do need to use digital ID. And I think what they're trying to do is two things simultaneously. They're trying to create this dystopian, technologically advanced society while simultaneously ushering in the third world and creating so much instability by doing so that eventually all of the Australians are going to call out for a solution. Hey, please help us get these people out. And then that's when they're able to really switch on the digital ID at scale and enforce something like a social credit system. So it's like your typical problem reaction solution playbook, in my view.
Right. And also a big part of it is the people you're bringing in from the third world or whatnot. They're just happy to be living in a first world country. So they're going to take whatever kind of deal is given to them. And ultimately, the goal is to replace you and to have a new permanent underclass, kind of like in 1984. You have the elites and then you have kind of the people living out in the boonies that are just kind of controlled. And that's what they're trying to do.
It is kind of like a negative feedback loop. And I even like we talk about the illegal immigration that comes out of Mexico. I mean, it had, you know, the United States decided instead of going into the conflict with Iran and said, hey, let's address the cartel and all of these things that are happening in our hemisphere that are causing the ripple down effect where the people don't have the stability to want to live. Like, come on. I mean, we don't think about like when we go home and driving on the way home and like having a point check, like a checkpoint where somebody has a gun up to your head and says, well, you need to pay us if you want to go back home.
Yeah, I mean, like, here's the thing. There are military actions that we would support, right? But we never get anything that would actually benefit the people. It's always just for some giant transnational capital scheme. From what you're telling me, Australia sounds like a Terminator or a Brave New World.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, and again, that's why I'm so patriotic and why I love the United States. It's why I haven't been back to Australia in 10 years. In fact, I don't actually think I could go back anymore. I'm pretty sure I would be arrested if I went back. Yeah, because, I mean, I've been pretty outspoken about what I think when it comes to Israel and Bibi Netanyahu and the Likud party. And honestly, the people in Australia who've been arrested, it's been for far more benign things than stuff that I've said. So honestly, I am a little fearful of going back. And that upsets me to an extent, not because I want to live there, but, you know, I'm married. We're trying to start a family. One day I'd like to bring my children to meet their grandparents over there. And so that's a little bit upsetting for me. And I don't really think that there's anything that can correct course in Australia right now. I mean, people are starting to wake up. There was a March for Australia last year where tens of thousands of people took to the streets protesting. And of course, the Australian media labeled it as white neo-Nazis, right? Which is what they always do. Whenever you try to speak truth to power, they just label you as all of these names. They try to discredit you. So the people are waking up, but again, I'm a little bit fearful that it's already too late.
And I hate seeing those little cops prance around their yellow vests with their little cute hat. Oh, la, 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 we're all happy. Those are the most authoritarian Nazi-like thugs. I mean, think about COVID. I mean, I've seen videos of a parent dragged away from their child as their child is force injected with a vaccine. That came out of Australia. I've seen videos of people raid people's homes and come and grab old ladies because they're posting on Facebook about going to an anti-mask protest.
Yeah.
Talk about that maybe a little bit.
That's what radicalized me, actually, in politics. I was actually quite apolitical prior to COVID. I just hadn't really informed myself. I would say I lived a fairly regular life. And I was living out in Maui, Hawaii. That's where I initially moved when I came to the United States. I was out there for 4 years. And then COVID hit. It was pretty bad in Hawaii. I'd say it was one of the worser states. You know, people were getting in trouble for walking out on the beach, you know, police approaching them. And so I decided to move over to Florida. And while all of this was happening, my mom would call me still every day, even when I was in Hawaii, which I still considered to be pretty bad lockdowns. And she would say, I am so relieved that you're in America. And that's kind of what radicalized me to think, like, what are the difference between these political systems? That what, you know, Australia is currently experiencing is so different to the freedom that we still have in the United States, especially in these red states, right? Which is why I moved out here to Florida. And it got me really curious and actually started to really expand my understanding of political systems.
Sure. Well, it's a beautiful thing to be able to participate in free society, to have First Amendment, to have Second Amendment, all the things we take for granted in America. These other nations, they don't have the rights that we have. And this is something that we discuss all the time on the show. You know, if we're really about exporting democracy, if we're really about exporting free speech, then instead of J.D. Vance wagging his finger in front of the EU leaders, you know, instead of going to this war with Iran, why haven't we blockaded Britain? Why haven't we blockaded any of these nations that are suppressing and oppressing their own people? And I think it's so clear to see. And it's so obvious that these are deprivations of human rights. These are illegal. These are crimes against humanity, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what, and when we come back from the break, I do want to ask you just a little bit about kind of like the differences between the U.S. and the rest of the world and the things that, you know, we might not understand how good we have it, because it's very often that, like, I have conversations and sometimes I catch myself as I've read a story and I'm like, oh, wow, that's really bad. I wouldn't want that.
Absolutely.
We're good over here. But yeah, we're coming up on a break here. This is a phenomenal conversation. We want to continue doing this. You guys, you should give her a follow.
Absolutely. You got to follow her on Rumble. Want to let y'all know we got that methylene blue tincture sale. Going to keep telling you about it. 72% off. If you're thinking about taking methylene blue, taking it in the past before, go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get that methylene blue. Really incredible product. We got methylene red as well, our own proprietary blend, and the cooler bundle. We're going to be right back with Amy Dangerfield after the break.
We have it all. Ultramethylene Blue, we have the best. The Shilajit, we have the best. The Turmeric, we have the best. We have the best spike protein, pro cardiovascular, ultra life force. The best Irish sea moss gummies and capsules. Incredible. Research for yourself. We have the best at thealtramethylene.com. And if you buy any of them, they're 50% off when you sign up for auto ship. Cancel anytime. And you guarantee it never sells out. They hold it back. You get 50% off on future orders. And anybody that downloads for free the Android or the Apple app, you find both links to it at alexjonesapp.com. It's free. You get an additional 20% off at checkout on top of that. Now, I had to convince Bitly to do this. They were a little skeptical because they like to give you good deals, but not this good, because it's loss leader when you use the app. But because we have an 80%+ reorder rate on things like Ultramethylene Blue, it's actually working, because you get it, you love it, and you keep ordering. So these are great products. I want to induce you to try them. You know our information is hardcore. Try the products. It's just as hardcore. 1776 worldwide. We will crush the 1984 globalist system. God bless you all.